Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and coordinator and host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Now, since the beginning of the pandemic, Spirit continues to be the ideal way to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is an extremely important one. It's called Act Fast, How to Identify, Treat, and Prevent Stroke. It will have extremely important and life-saving information. We are so happy to welcome to the Spirit Forum, Margaret Hun, DO. Dr. Hun is an assistant professor of neurology at Weill Cornell Medicine. She is a board-certified neurologist and treats stroke patients and subspecializes in severe neurological injuries in the intensive care unit. Today, she had something very urgent before meeting us, so we're just so happy that she was able to join us today. Our program comes from the Community Health Initiative of the Hospital System of New York Presbyterian Queens. We are so appreciative of our relationship there and the wonderful speakers that they brought to Spirit. It is my honor to turn the Spirit Forum over to Dr. Hun. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you so much for that kind introduction. Again, apologies for that urgent matter I had to take care of, and thank you for your patience. So today I'm going to talk about stroke. Let me share my screen, and please let me know if everyone can see it.
Yes, we're good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. So this is a very important topic, and I am honored to talk about it and share information and answer any questions that anyone may have. So the topic is stroke, and the goal of this is for everyone to be very comfortable in knowing how to identify stroke and what to do in an emergency. And the first step is recognizing it. And then I'll give more information about what we do once someone comes into hospital in order to treat stroke and understand how to prevent stroke. So I'm very glad that we have a full house here. So a little bit about the importance of this topic. Stroke is the second highest cause of death globally. And the issue with stroke is it doesn't always kill. It's actually, it causes significant disability that costs the healthcare system and the quality of life of individuals significantly affected by stroke. And unfortunately, as you track time, the incidence of stroke has actually increased over the years. So this diagram just shows that after ischemic heart disease, which is heart attacks, coronary artery disease, heart issues, is the second cause of death is stroke. The importance of this for people to be aware of this is that it's treatable. If we can get to the patient in time, the person in time, and the community is so important in this initiative to be able to help someone. So that's why we will talk about in moving forward how we can treat and first recognizing. So how to recognize a stroke? Like I said, friends, community is very important because you spend time with each other. If you're able to recognize, then you can actually save your friend or yourself from significant disability and maintain a quality of life. So the mnemonic, the acronym to remember the signs of stroke is FAST, which means, you know, you think of fast, you act fast. So I'll go through each one individually. And these are signs that if you do recognize these signs, then to call 911 emergently. So first one is F, which stands for facial drooping. If you notice that someone's face is, or your face is drooping to one side, the lower face, or that it's numb, that can be a sign of stroke. So if you notice that, ask someone to smile, smile yourself to see if your smile looks asymmetric. Arm weakness, arm. Is one arm weak or numb? Ask the person or raise both arms to see if one drifts more than the other. Speech. Is the speech slurred? Talking normally and then not talking normally. Sounds like someone is drunk potentially or not enunciating. You can't understand them clearly when normally they can speak very clearly. Can you understand them when they're trying to speak to you, or are they confused and not really understanding you? So the easy way to test that is just to ask the person, can you repeat after me? I like to say, today is a sunny day. Repeat, today is a sunny day. Can you do that? And then T stands for time. Time is brain, essentially. So if anyone has any of these symptoms, which is abnormal, one-sided symptoms, then you have to call 911. Other signs is numbness that we talked about besides weakness. Sudden confusion can also be a sign of stroke, but it can actually mean a lot of things, a lot of other medical problems, and seeking emergent medical care, it would be important regardless of whether it's a stroke or not. Trouble seeing is another thing that is not tested in that mnemonic, but if all of a sudden someone cannot see one side of their atmosphere environment, that can be a sign that a part of the brain is affected. A very common thing is people would start all of a sudden walking abnormally, feeling unbalanced, that can be a sign of stroke. Headache is another sign that is anyone who has a sudden headache and it's new, it's important to get evaluation as well. So what is a stroke? I get asked this very commonly even after a stroke. So I will go over what a stroke actually is. And it really is that the brain, a part of the brain lacks blood flow and is dying or at the risk of dying, the neurons dying. So there are two types of strokes. There is strokes, which is brain injury again, like I said, that is caused by a blocked artery. That is a very common cause of stroke actually. So this diagram shows that the blood flow to the brain comes from the heart to this great vessel and then up to the brain and supplies the brain tissue with blood and oxygen and nutrients. So the brain is very sensitive to lack of blood flow. When there is a lack of blood flow, the brain can only sustain minutes. Sometimes depending on the integrity of the brain, maybe hours, there can be some collateral flow. But essentially when a vessel is blocked off, the brain is at a very high risk and will most likely have a stroke and cause injury and neuronal death. Another type of stroke is a hemorrhagic stroke, a bleeding stroke. So instead of a blocked artery that is causing injury and to the brain, what is happening is the artery actually ruptures and blood comes out. So it's a bleeding stroke. It's a hemorrhagic stroke in the sense that the artery ruptured and caused injury to the brain, which also impedes blood flow to the brain. Like I said, time is brain. So when you quantify it, during a stroke, when the blood flow is interrupted to the brain, 1.9 million brain cells are lost per minute. And in 1 hour, 120 million brain cells are lost. So the quicker that we can, hopefully if it's the kind that we can reopen, the vessel we can reopen, then the better the chance of a good outcome. So how do we do that? Like, what is the treatment? So you were able to recognize a stroke, a friend who may be having a stroke, or someone, a bystander, and you call 911, the emergency team brings them to hospital. This is where we step in and try to minimize any disability from the stroke. So you may have heard of this medication, it's the clotbuster, you may have heard. It's TPA, and what it does is it's a very potent clotbuster, blood thinner essentially, but it only lasts very briefly. So the residual effects are actually very brief. Within minutes to hours, the medicine is usually out of the system. But the importance of that is it's able to break up blood clots that are formed in the arteries. As long as this is not a bleeding stroke, it's a blood clot stroke, then that has an opportunity to break up the clot and restore blood flow to the brain. But however, you need to be within a certain time window of 3 to 4.5 hours. So if someone has symptoms and they're not found, or we don't get to them until hour 6, they're not a candidate for this therapy. Another therapy is actually mechanical thrombectomy. And what that is simply is that we're able to go in through the arterial system, access either through the groin or an artery in the hand, and get to the arteries that supply the brain. And by doing that, we can get up to the clot, hopefully, if the clot is in a position that we can retrieve and pull out that clot. So it's like plumbing, essentially, where we can pull the clot out and open up the pipes again to restore blood flow. Again, it depends on how far the stroke has completed, because if the stroke is completed already, meaning that the brain tissue is already dead, then we may not be able to do that. So again, it really requires that someone comes into the hospital very quickly to see if there are candidates for either TPA, this clotbuster medication, or this medication where we can pull out the clot. So what are the risk factors for stroke? What is your risk factor for a stroke? High blood pressure, hypertension. It's the number one cause of stroke. As you remember, that arteries can either be clotted off or be ruptured in a hemorrhagic stroke. And it's because the integrity of the blood vessels to the brain are injured. And it takes time for that to happen, essentially. So it can take years, decades of high blood pressure. And over time, the force of the blood pressure to the artery causes injury to the artery, causes plaque buildup. So that is a very number one preventable cause of stroke. 3 out of 4 strokes are caused by high blood pressure. So what should the normal blood pressure be? The target blood pressure should be less than the top number. Systolic blood pressure should be below 140 to minimize your risk for stroke. So it does require regular medical checkups, routine doctor visits to be able to screen you, because you don't feel high blood pressure. That is why it's called the silent killer. It causes heart disease and strokes until when you have those complications, it's too late. Another mechanism for stroke is, instead of high blood pressure causing injury to the vessels over time and then blocking off or rupturing, is that the blood vessel may be open. You may have normal blood vessels, but then a clot actually comes from somewhere else in the body that blocks off the artery. And the most common cause of that, especially as we age, is called a condition called atrial fibrillation. It's an abnormal heartbeat of an abnormal rhythm of the heart that causes the blood to be stagnant. So here you can see the clots in one of the chambers of the heart. It's in the atrium. And when the heartbeat is abnormal within this rhythm, that blood can actually, the flow is interrupted and is not perfect. So clots can form and actually go from the heart into the brain. So this is actually also detectable. And if someone comes in with a stroke, we always, always monitor very closely for this rhythm, especially as people age. It does increase numerically your risk for stroke by 5. In order to prevent that, if we do find this rhythm, the medication long-term would be a blood thinner to prevent strokes from this mechanism. Diabetes, which is high blood sugar chronically, it doubles your risk for a stroke. Every 2 minutes, an adult with diabetes is hospitalized for a stroke. And the reason it does that is illustrated by this diagram. On the left is a normal open artery with normal blood flow. And on the right, you see an artery with what we call atherosclerosis, which is a fatty buildup and plaque, essentially, that happens. And diabetes contribute to that plaque buildup and eventually narrow that blood vessel until it clots off. What goes hand in hand usually and also contributes in this fashion is high cholesterol, hyperlipidemia. It in the same mechanism, it causes atherosclerotic buildup, which is the fatty plaque buildup in the arteries, and eventually that artery can clot off. Smoking also leads to a similar mechanism. Damage to the blood vessel, plaque buildup, blocking off of the artery. So can you prevent a stroke? You have risk factors, let's say. Can you prevent it? Absolutely, 80% of strokes are preventable. So that's why it's so important to screen for these risk factors, to see your doctor, to be able to detect and control and modify these risk factors, because all of those are modifiable. You have control over that. So you don't want to take medications. Most working with your doctor, you can see how high your risk for coronary, like heart disease and stroke is. And you may be able to have an opportunity to not take medications to control those risk factors. If you do, it would be ideal for you to take those medications. But what are some other things besides taking blood pressure medication and cholesterol diabetes medication, or in conjunction to that, to minimize your risk? Secondhand smoking has been associated with a higher risk for stroke, similar to that of a smoker. Of course, smoking is a higher risk, but having the exposure of cigarettes, smoking can actually increase your risk. Diet. Diet is modifiable, and a diet in low sodium, because low sodium actually contributes to hypertension, which is high blood pressure. So if you can cut down on sodium, that will decrease your blood pressure. And eating a diet with high fruits and vegetables, a lot of antioxidants. There are two diets I usually recommend. There's the DASH diet, which is a low salt diet. And then there's a Mediterranean diet. I like both. Overall, having a balanced diet is very important. I never say someone absolutely 100% do not drink wine or alcohol. I think in very moderation is fine, but you have to note it and be very cognizant of it and look at it in the whole of your lifestyle and diet. So this is an example of a DASH diet on the right, where, as you can see, a majority of it is grains and vegetables. Having 6 to 8 servings of grains a day, and ideally whole wheat, fresh fruits and vegetables of 4 to 5 servings per day, and then lower in quantity, but you can still have here and there are very limited sweets and fats, a lot of lean protein and low fat diet diet. So that will decrease your cholesterol, and the sugar would decrease your risk for diabetes. This is actually very, so this is the Mediterranean diet, and this is very similar. It emphasizes on fruits, vegetables, and grains, again, and eating fish and seafood, which provides omega-3s at least two times a week, and then minimizing, again, the meats and the sweets. Exercise. Exercise is so important, not only for stroke prevention, but as a neurologist, also to maintain good cognitive brain health and minimize risk for cognitive decline and dementia. So it, you know, as far as like how much you need, I recommend to do a moderate intensity at least 5 days a week, if it's safe, if you have balance and you can build up to this, but doing it in a safe manner is very important, and working with your doctor to identify your medical conditions that may prevent you from safely doing moderate intensity exercise is important. So work with your doctor and understand your safety to do that. Safety is always the most important thing. But moderate intensity, it really means that, you know, you're getting your heart rate up to a level where you can't have a conversation with me or the one next to you, where you don't want to talk, essentially, because you're at that intensity where you can't, but not to the point where you are completely out of breath and huffing and puffing. That's higher intensity exercise. So at least five times a day or five times a week, or low intensity every day. So some suggestions I have are to take a walk every morning after breakfast or lunch or dinner. It can be a social thing too. Start a fitness club with your friends and motivate each other to work out. Some people like that, and everyone's different. I like working out by myself, but some people like working out with others. So just find a way that makes it fun for you, and know that you're doing something good for your health. When you exercise, like I said, reach to a point where you're breathing decently hard, not like exhausted and huffing and puffing, and you can talk a few words, but not have a conversation. When you can take the stairs instead of elevators, take your time going up that. It helps with balance too. As we age, our balance gets off. So when you maintain activity and exercise, you actually maintain the safety overall of your balance. So duration is about 10 to 15 minutes is fine, or 30 consecutive minutes, 30 minutes of the activity at once. Losing weight is very important as well. Weight has been associated with strokes, but it's not because obesity is directly associated with stroke, but it's everything that comes with that, that obese state, which is low activity, poor diet, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. So that by losing weight, that can modify all of those other risk factors for stroke. And again, individualized care is very important. Everyone is built differently. Those recommendations that I provided are very important and crucial to preventing stroke, but you have to do it in a way that is safe and correct for you. So working with your doctor very hand in hand and closely, and at least very closely monitoring those modifiable medical conditions that you have control over, and finding the right regimen, most likely would be medications, and maybe at some point you may be able to get off medications, or you can start, you're at the point where, you know, it's not that your cholesterol isn't that high, we can try diet and exercise first instead of doing medications to prevent a stroke. So there are many tailored approaches. And if you don't tolerate one medication, most medications don't have significant side effects, but if you don't tolerate one medication. There are so many other options. So that's why it's important to work with your doctor to see what's right for you. But ignoring it and not doing something is a disservice to yourself. Because preventing stroke, it's your life. It's your quality of life. You want to be able to, you know, interact with your loved one and have a long, healthy, productive life as much as possible, and prevent decline. It does require a good relationship and a trusting relationship with your doctor. So a lot of these slides are from American Heart Association. They have a lot of resources as well. So I do encourage you checking out stroke.org. It's our body of evidence and our professional organization. Thank you for your attention. It was a pleasure to talk to you, everyone. Any questions?
So thank you so much, Dr. Hun. It was very, very informative. I think everybody learned a lot. We hope not to have to use this information, but at least we have it in our back pocket just in case we see that the need is there. If anyone has any questions, can you please put them into the chat now? So there was a comment that about fitness programs in the New York area. There's Dorote and JASA. I'm sure, since we're very much an international group here, but I'm sure that in every community, there would be places that people can go to exercise, senior centers, Jewish community centers. Okay, oh, so one question is, how can LDL be lowered?
Right, so that's a great question. And you identify the bad cholesterol. We do look at the LDL. Like I said, diet and exercise are the two modifiable lifestyle. So you can do that. Depending on the level of the LDL, you may need medication because it is very important to control the cholesterol. The medication for that is a statin.
Okay. Are there any other questions? The question was, it was a request. Could you please repeat the arm symptoms to look for?
Yes, my pleasure. So having anything, that any symptoms are sudden, any neurologic deficit that are sudden is very concerning for a stroke, because remember it's a blockage of an artery, so it happens very suddenly. So the arm symptoms, and usually leg, it's one side of the body, essentially, like bottom line, one side of the body gets suddenly weaker. So if someone was able to hold something without problems, and then all of a sudden it's dropping things the next day, or like whenever you notice it, or all of a sudden dropping things, that is a possible sign of stroke. It can be very subtle. But if you were to test it, you would test it by having them hold up their arm and then seeing if there is drift of their arm compared to the other. We have two sides for a reason. So when compared to one side that is weaker than the other side, like drifting like this, or not being able to move it, would be the most obvious. And the same thing with the leg. It's the same thing with the leg too, and the face.
Okay, so a few things have popped up here. What is the threshold? Wait, where'd it go? What is the threshold good number for LDL?
So less than 70, less than 70 would be ideal.
Okay. Does hereditary effect, is there a hereditary effect of stroke possibility in family members? Like if, I guess, a parent had it, does it make somebody more likely to have it?
Yes, there is a genetic predisposition for stroke, and a lot of the genetic predisposition is in the risk factors. There may be a higher risk for the, I do see some families do have severe arterial disease, atherosclerotic disease, but a lot of families also have a genetic predisposition for all of those other risk factors for stroke, like high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. There are familial forms of high cholesterol. So I think it's more of not like stroke as the genetic risk factors, as risk factors for all of those other things that puts you at risk for stroke. So in short, yes, genetics do play a role.
How to treat those who have problems clotting?
That
makes sense?
Yes, it does. So the clotting, the clot coming from another place, that kind of stroke and blocking the artery instead of plaque buildup over time and clotting the artery, that's, like I said, the highest risk factor for that is called atrial fibrillation, the abnormal heart rate. So one is detecting it. So if you're having abnormal flutters or palpitations, heart flutters, or you feel your pulse and feels irregular, you know, it should be beat to beat is normal, but it's like beat. Irregular heart rate may be atrial fibrillation. So detecting it with your doctor, they can do like EKGs and monitoring. And the treatment for that, if we do find that rhythm, is, like I said, the blood thinner. There are many blood thinners out there. There are some ones that are like safer than others. Some are more manageable than others. So it's you may have heard like Dolax, oral anticoagulants, or Coumadin.
Okay. There's a request to talk about mini strokes and the treatments of those.
Right. So mini strokes are this, in my mind, the same as a stroke. It's the same mechanism, essentially. If you do have a mini stroke, let's say someone had transient weakness of one side of their body, that is very typical symptoms for stroke, like let's say face and arm weakness, face, arm, and leg weakness for about, you know, 10 minutes to an hour, and then it resolves on its own, and we do the whole stroke workup. You should still seek medical attention. You should still see your doctor, even if those symptoms resolved, because they will evaluate all those risk factors, all those studies for stroke risk factors, see if, like, where it can be coming from. And if it's artery related, then you're at a high risk for stroke, especially in the acute period, in the first like 15 to 30 days, you're at higher risk for stroke, because you already have, what it means, that mini stroke, it means that there was interruption to blood flow to the brain.
Okay. How often should you have your blood tested for cholesterol? And also, how is brain blood vessel bleeding stroke treated?
Great
Those
question.
Two different questions.
Okay. So you may have to remind me, Judy, for the
no problem.
Question. Okay, so
the first was about how often should you be tested for cholesterol?
Yeah, high blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, those labs that are involved, those should be tested based on what your doctor thinks is appropriate. Usually annual checkups, like for me, I have annual checkups. For someone who has those conditions, usually they like to follow you, depending on how controlled the numbers are, then it may be 3 months. They may want to do something like either do some intervention, like lifestyle intervention or medication, and then follow up with repeat labs or blood pressure reading in 3 months. If you've been stable, it may be 6 months. If you're very stable and very healthy, it may just be 1 year, every year.
Okay. Next, and I think that so far this seems to be the last question, unless somebody else has something.
Oh, wait. One more question. There was one more question. The second part of the question.
This is the second one.
Okay.
How is brain blood vessel bleeding stroke treated?
Okay. So the hemorrhagic stroke, that kind of stroke where the blood pressure or blood vessel ruptures, that one, unfortunately, we don't have a treatment for. What we do in the acute setting, like if you're in the hospital setting, what we do is make sure that blood pressure is controlled to prevent worsening bleeding and worsening stroke. So that is very important, and it's important, but there's nothing like we can reverse the bleeding, essentially. Usually what happens is it stops. It just ruptures and then it stops immediately. So we monitor the blood pressure, make sure it's like less than a certain range in the hospital to prevent recurrent bleeding, and make sure that the exam and the imaging is stable to make sure that the bleeding has stopped. To prevent that in the long term, it really is really critical for blood pressure to be controlled, because that is the risk factor for hemorrhagic strokes.
Okay, one more question came in. Is it true that if you exhibit symptoms of stroke, you should take an aspirin?
So that is a little bit of a difficult question, because if you had the bleeding stroke, you should not take the aspirin, and you don't know which one until you get to the hospital. So I would say leave it to EMS and the doctors to decide whether you need an aspirin, because once you're in the hospital, it's very easy to give you aspirin.
Okay, well, that was good. Excellent question. Thank you. And really important answer. A few people have asked me, the recording will be available either sometime later today or early tomorrow morning, and it is sent to everyone directly, automatically. Many, many, many people, Doctor, you should know, there were 60 some people, close to 70 watching at any point today. But that's only a third of who registered. We have people all over the world that will be looking forward to seeing this. Many of them are working. Maybe there are doctor's appointments, taking care of grandchildren. So there are many, many people literally all over the world that have registered to see this. And all of, and everybody who's watching now and anybody who registered will automatically get the recording, and that will show the PowerPoint presentation as well. And I think, Doctor, you'll also give us your contact info, because that was a request. So somebody said, the key takeaway, stroke is preventable. Okay, that is the purpose of having this presentation.
Yes.
Okay. So I think, unless there's anything else, I think that is it. Wait, let me just see. Someone made a comment about, gave a personal experience. And they just said that it's important to emphasize any one-sided situation could be considered a stroke. You want to comment on that, Doctor?
Right. Any one-sided asymmetry in its sudden.
So things for people to watch out for. So unless there is anything else, I think that is it. Just a couple of announcements. I just want to tell everybody that Spirit will be taking a quick break next week before July 4th. So enjoy, now that we're all opened up a bit more, perhaps people can safely enjoy the holiday with families. But we will be returning on Tuesday, July, I think it's 5th or 6th. Obviously you'll all be getting information about it. And at that point, with that Tuesday presentation, Spirit will be transitioning to once a week. We were twice a week for a very long time during the height of the pandemic, but now we're going to go once a week with still wonderful programming of all sorts. Many people have actually offered suggestions, and I welcome them. It's always nice to hear from people, but we will be going once a week, or at least for now. So again, I want to thank the New York Presbyterian Hospital of Queens for continuing to give us wonderful information. I see on the program today is Ms. Ming Der Chang, who has been super helpful. We thank you very much. And of course, Dr. Han, and all of the presenters we've received. So we're looking forward to hearing and seeing more, and just keeping us healthy. So just everybody, I wanna tell you to have a great day, be safe, be healthy, and have a great Shabbos. Thank you, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Thank you.